Howdy, I'm Kate Kavanaugh, and you're listening to the Mind, Body, and Soil podcast, where we're laying the groundwork for our land, ourselves, and for generations to come by looking at the way every thread of life is connected to one another. Communities above ground mirror the communities below the soil, which mirror the vast community of the cosmos. As the saying goes, as above, so below. Join me as we take a curious journey into agriculture, biology, history, spirituality, health, and so much more. I can't wait to unearth all of these incredible topics alongside you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Groundwork Podcast, where we are exploring the threads of what it means to be humans woven into this earth. I am in the midst of transitioning us from the Mind, Body, and Soil podcast. I'm not doing it super gracefully because honestly, I just want to do it on my own time, and my pace right now is a little bit slower than I'd like it to be. And I'm in this space where I'm practicing just letting what is be and letting myself, my body, my mind do what it needs in the moments that it needs them, which has honestly been a bit of a revelation. I want to give just a teeny tiny personal update at the front of this because I know that the last solo episode I did was really about walking through a time of struggle with me. And little did I know that that was really just the beginning of a season of some big struggles. This last year has brought with it some of the hardest times I think I've had in my life. And I say that not because I'm seeking anything from anyone, but because I do think it's important to be honest about it. And I found some resistance in myself. You know, I haven't been on Instagram much. And I found some resistance in myself about sharing this time around. And I think because it has been just a little bit of a harrowing journey. Western Daughters, for those of you that know that Western Daughters was struggling some, and it's on better footing now. I think that what I keep telling people is that my crystal ball right now is incredibly foggy on what the future holds. But Josh has spent a lot of time in Denver getting Western Daughters on even ground. He's done it, which is incredible. And that left me alone for much of the winter. And I had this running joke at the beginning that this was kind of my shining winter, a la Stephen King. And I don't know if I should have joked about that because it kind of ended up being just that. And then a hip injury, a torn glute med, a stabilizer muscle of all things, and the poignancy of that is not lost on me, that it was stabilizing every step that I took. I tore that and it shifted my walking practice, which I'm really dependent on my physical practice for my mental health. And some of that declined. And then I was facing some big and kind of scary recurrence of some health issues that I've been navigating. And all of that led to just a space in life where I've been a little bit quiet. I've gone to ground a little bit, as it were. And I think in that act of going to ground, like any animal that is hibernating or that is finding a sense of being held within the matrix of the earth and her connections and that darkness, it has just been a time for me to be a little bit withdrawn from social media, a little bit withdrawn from other areas of my life while I work on healing. And I've really found that. And I have also found that, like a bear waking from its slumber in spring, that I feel a sort of innate thaw and readiness to peek out and find myself in the interconnected web of life above ground once again. And so there couldn't be a better time to really be thinking about what it means to lay the groundwork. And I'm really coming back to this because we are about to take a bit of a radical turn in our explorations here on the podcast, which is why I am coming to you solo, so that I can kind of couch this in terms of what brought me to these explorations and where we're going and how it ties in with where we've been. I know that we have spent a great amount of time exploring the food system, especially through the lens of regenerative agriculture. I've spent the last almost 15 years working in the food system, and we've also been exploring where human health and soil health line up, and nutrition has been a passion of mine, especially as I have had to leverage pretty much everything that I could get access to in order to find some healing in my body. And for those of you that have been here since the beginning, you'll know that 3 years ago, I could scarcely get out of bed, and that this podcast was a six-year dream before it became a reality because I didn't have the energy to make it. And here on its two-year anniversary, I'm finding myself grappling with some health issues, but also realizing how much I have healed through the act of sharing this podcast with the world. And I'm really ready to share a very different facet of my interests and my work. And I want to talk a little bit about how I got here. I think that having spent 15 years in the food system and really coming from a space where I was looking at trying to be connected to the origin of my food at the level of soil, at the level of animal as a farmer, at the level of connecting with farmers and ranchers as a consumer, as a butcher shop owner, and becoming really interested in our food supply chain. And so I think it's natural that that exploration would lead to wanting to explore other supply chains, which is what we're about to embark on. At the same time, you know, one of the things that we've really been looking at in the scope of this podcast is the potential of regenerative agriculture to restore ecosystems, to work to sequester carbon, and to draw down greenhouse gases that are shifting our planet. And as many of you will know, this is not something that has really made it into the mainstream conversation. In fact, agriculture is often deeply vilified in the mainstream conversation, and regenerative agriculture isn't even looked at. And, you know, we hear this, it's not the cow, it's the how, with a lot of frequency. And I started to become curious about why cows had become such a massive scapegoat in the first place. And I kept asking myself, if it's not cows, what is driving so much of the shifts on this planet? And what are some of those forces? And when you tease out other supply chains outside of the food supply chain, what does it say about our world that has become so rapidly globalized since the Industrial Revolution? Really, though it started well before that, and has rapidly become a more interconnected global supply chain over the last 150, 25 years. And so asking myself also, how did we get here? And I feel like I hear that question a lot in the rhetorical way that nobody's actually going to try to answer that question. But I really wanted to know. And I really wanted to tease out the complexity of the confluence of historical and geopolitical and ecological and psychological and all of these different influences on just how we got here. And what I found is that there's a really interconnected web of events and of different industries that are worth exploring. Before I get into that, I want to start with the idea of resources. Since we are a group of people that are really interested in food on this podcast, food is one of our biggest resources. And as my friend James Connolly says, we have terraformed this planet in search of calories. And I started to really think about our historical relationship to resources and also to waste. And what I begin to land on is that prior to the advent of agriculture, around 10,000 years ago, depending on who you ask, we moved our bodies to resources, whether this was food or fuel in the form of kindling, which I think actually might have been the primary driver of moving us from place to place, and other resources that we need, whether that was salt and salt licks, whatever that was. And it represented this sort of seasonal rhythm of procurement. And so we're moving our bodies to resources. At the same time, our waste, whether that's animal hide clothing or little scraps of food or our own excreta, would have just been a part of the ecological cycles of this planet of death and decay. And I want to fast forward to now, where we move resources to our bodies and we move our waste away from our bodies. And I think that this is really important because these small changes have absolutely changed the entire world. And I think that this is what I could find in terms of the lowest common denominator of simplicity in explaining why this really interests me. And I think that one of the things that's notable about what happens when we move resources to our bodies and waste away from our bodies is that both those resources and that waste either comes from or goes to a very specific place. And that place is away. And that is a big umbrella term for a place that we cannot see, a place that we might not even consider, a place with people and ecosystems and resources and labor practices and all sorts of things that we are not even imagining because it is out of sight and out of mind. For those of us that have worked in food a long time, there's kind of this running joke that will say that a lot of people believe that their food comes from the grocery store and that pork chops just grow on a pork chop tree and arrive in this hermetically sealed container on the grocery store shelves, sight unseen. But we know that there are farmers and ranchers that are raising these animals, that there are processors or slaughterhouses that are killing these animals. And in between those steps, there are truck drivers and more ranchers, more farmers that are driving that food from place to place for it eventually to reach a market, and that there's this sort of regenerative, smaller, decentralized system, and then there is a bigger centralized system of conventional industrial agriculture. And I'm not going to get super into that because we've explored it in depth on the podcast. And I started to become really interested in why food was the only supply chain that we were really discussing. And I think that there are a lot of factors that go into that. I think, first of all, it feels in many ways, and as I deepen this conversation, I think you'll begin to see this, that it is the last bastion of supply chains that we feel like we have a modicum of control and agency over, that we can connect with a farmer or a rancher and where our food comes from but it might be impossible to do that with where our shoes come from or where a pair of jeans comes from, and certainly where a laptop or a cell phone comes from. And so I think that it's easiest to sort of see and connect with that. And the second piece of this, and we've also talked a lot about this on the podcast, is that our food is, we have an incredibly intimate relationship with our food. And I know that I have said this time and time again, because I think it is so important that when we eat, when we put food in our mouths and we chew that food and we swallow it and it goes inside of our stomach, and our food that was once other, it plant bodies, animal bodies that were tied into nutrient cycles within an ecosystem, those get broken down and they pass a one cell wall thick lining in our intestines, and they actually become us. They become a part of our cells. Those minerals, those vitamins, those nutrients become us. And this is an incredibly intimate act. And I think because of this, that's why we have these tightly held beliefs. It's why we have a sort of camps that get created around dietary preferences, whether that's veganism or carnivore, whatever that is in part because eating is such an intimate act. And one of the things I've come back to on the podcast is that our relationship with our ecosystem, with our environment, is intimacy. That those boundaries of self or other is incredibly porous, and we are constantly coming in and out of one another in this sort of interpenetrating realm of nutrient cycling, whether it's the oxygen that was once plant tissues becoming part of our tissues, our exhaled carbon dioxide becoming a part of plant tissues, even with our clothing that we wear, you know, some of those microplastics, some of those toxins are becoming a part of our body increasingly. And so there is this really porous boundary of self and other, something I think that we really touched on a lot throughout the last year of episodes, whether it was with Fred Provenza talking some about those boundaries, whether it was with Alana Collin, the author of 10% Human, where she defines this fact that one out of every 10 cells in our body is human and the rest are microbial, bacterial. It's our microbiome. And I think that really illustrates so beautifully this point that it's really hard to see where self and other begin and end. And it was through this lens of, okay, so we are interested in where our food comes from. And this is a main resource that in the past we moved our bodies to. And now that we move to our bodies in time and space, and it requires a lot of resources and infrastructure. And I suddenly wanted to know about all the other resources that we move to our bodies, all of the waste we move away from our bodies, and the infrastructural systems, whether that's shipping or roads, that underpin them. And I think that when I went into the podcast with Ben Goldfarb, the author of Crossings, about how roads have reshaped our world, right? That there's 40 million miles of roads around the globe, and that is increasing every year. And he had this quote from researcher William Lawrence that talked about the incoming infrastructure tsunami. And I think that Ben's work, both on roads and in beavers, and if you haven't listened to that episode, it's one of my favorite episodes that I've ever recorded, and I highly recommend it, really caught me in that I suddenly saw something that was an inextricable part of my everyday life that I had never looked at through that lens. And that was a road. And I'll come back to this quote that I think is worth looking at. So this quote is, "Looking at life from a different perspective makes you realize that it's not the deer that is crossing the road, rather it's the road that is crossing the forest." It's a quote from Muhammad Ali. And I think that this actually really beautifully illustrates some of the ways that we have bent ecosystems and our built world in order to provide us with resources, and the way that we view that now, both in the sort of overarching narrative that we see in popular journalism and also just in the way we see the world and its conveniences and its inconveniences. And I thought a lot about that. And Then I started picking at some work from Vince Beiser, whose book, The World in a Grain, is about the resource of sand, this thing that we view as being incredibly plentiful that we are actually running out of on Earth. And again, this really hit something in me that made me want to explore deeper. And we're gonna talk with Vince in this series, but he had a statistic in there of trying to make imaginable just how much concrete we're using every year. And concrete is composed of sand, it's composed of lime, it has a really big impact on climate and emissions. And he said that every year we use enough concrete to build a wall that would wrap around the equator that was 88 feet high and 88 feet wide. Now, those numbers are trying to make something intangible tangible, something that I would call a hyper object, which we discussed with Ben Goldfarb, something that is so big that it is, in comparison to humans, that it is almost impossible to really have a grasp of. It's a concept from philosopher Timothy Morton that I think we'll come back to, because so much of what we're talking about when we talk about infrastructure, when we talk about shipping, when we talk about resources, when we talk about topsoil erosion, are these numbers and these ideas that are just so big that it's almost impossible to wrap your mind around. But I think it's worth giving it a shot. And I love things that make it feel a little bit more tangible, like the idea of this concrete wall. And I think that within that, we also have to look at, you know, there was a recent study in Nature that our buildings and infrastructure outweigh all the world's trees and shrubs, and our plastic outweighs the dry weight of all animals. So all the infrastructure on Earth now outweighs all of the biomass on Earth. And I feel like this matters. This is our built world. And this is part of how we have terraformed the planet in order to move things hither and yon. And I mean, even to go a little bit of a step further, the weight equivalent of the moon doubled goes through the port of Los Angeles every year. And that's only about a third of the stuff that Americans are importing. And so some of these numbers, while being completely intangible, begins to give us a very different picture of our built world. And I think that our food system is very much a part of our built world. But I keep coming back to in this that, especially for those of us that are looking at how we could do this differently within the context of regenerative or holistic agriculture, you still have living beings that have an evolutionary history of being a part of the ecosystem and that capability of being a part of nutrient cycles. But when we're talking about stuff, when we're talking about plastic polymers, when we're talking about concrete, we're talking about something that's quite a bit different. Throughout this work, I kept coming back to this image that I feel like we're pulling out the guts of the earth and superimposing them on all of these ecosystems that make up our planet. to make this a little bit more topically relevant for something that has been in the news just here recently, you know, if you saw the shipping container ship crash into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, you witnessed a microcosm of this intersection that I've been so interested in. You know, you have old infrastructure made of aging concrete that collapsed due to an old container ship carrying containers full of stuff, probably in the realm of 7,000 containers, which the history of the shipping container in and of itself is something we're going to talk about, and it's wild, but I won't get into it here. This old ship that was experiencing electrical issues running into it. And then you have men on that bridge that were working at low wages to send money home that died. And this to me was a really local and current example of why I want to do some of these explorations. The same morning that the ship crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge, I was reading a passage from Annie Proulx's Finn, Bog, and Swamp, speaking about what might be possible if we reimagined our world as integrated with the natural world. She was looking at, here's the quote. "The environmental designer Julia Watson has tracked down extraordinary examples of cooperative ecological solutions to specific regional needs. Most striking are the living root bridges and ladders made by northern India's hill tribe people who arrived there about 40,000 years ago from Southeast Asia. Today, they live in the forested mountains in one of the world's rainiest places, where during the monsoon, violent rivers gush through the valleys, making travel between villages impossible. The region gets a staggering amount of monsoon rainfall that turns the network of villages into islands. The only bridges able to withstand the roaring inundation are those formed by training the roots of the sacred rubber fig trees across ravines, a labor that takes 50 years of work, but then lasts for hundreds more. The bridges are an artful tangle of monstrously long tree roots that writhe and twist through each other as living sculpture. The Khasi's history and spiritual origin beliefs are entwined with the multi-generational design. Ladders and walkways made the same way connect the upslope villages with the farmlands at a lower elevation." I thought a lot about this as these two, reading this passage intersected with the events on the Francis Scott Key Bridge a week or so ago. And you know, at the heart of some of these explorations, I think, has been a headlong collision between my own idealism and my realism. And I've loved that challenge. And so I don't think that it's possible to have living root bridges in every part of the United States, or that is something that we can implement as an infrastructural reality in most places. But I do think that what this passage does is it reminds us and illustrates a basis of what could be possible, and I think serves as an invitation to reimagine our world. And this is a really important point. I want to talk about reimagining our world because I think that this is at the heart of why cows have become such a great scapegoat and how we're moving forward and our idea of progress as this thing that is growth in perpetuity, is the continual creation of stuff that then becomes psychologically and functionally obsolescent, inciting the need for more stuff that just builds in these ever-lengthening cycles. And I keep coming back to an idea that David Graeber put forth, and I'm not alone in coming back to this quote, but David Graeber wrote, and quote, "The ultimate hidden truth of the world is that it is something that we make and could just as easily make differently." I'm going to read that one more time. Quote, "The ultimate hidden truth of the world is that it is something that we make and could just as easily make differently." A lot of times in these explorations that I've done, which sometimes felt really dark and psychologically heavy, I kept coming back to this, that we as humans are playful and imaginative, and we have an opportunity to leverage that into making our world completely differently. I couple that with a quote that I often come back to on the podcast that is attributed oftentimes to Mark Fisher, and Mark Fisher says it was someone else. But the idea that it is, quote, "It is easier to imagine the end of the world than it is to imagine the end of capitalism." And in a world where we imagine post-apocalyptic situations or activities, and we imagine rebuilding our world as it is now, something that my friend James pointed out to me that always just boggles my mind. We just reimagine. How could we build this the same? We have an incredible opportunity to take all of our imagination, all of our big ideas, all of our adaptability and flexibility as Homo sapiens, as animals on this planet, and to reimagine the world differently. And so as I come back to this question of why have cows been the scapegoat and how did we get here, I came back to this. If we blamed what is actually the problem, we'd have to reimagine our world. I think that this is really important, because as we look for scapegoats and as we point fingers, whether it's in journalism, whether it's in our own lives, at people and others, for how this world is shifting and changing at a climate level, at a social level, at an ecological level, on all of these different levels, I really believe that if we blamed what is actually the problem, we'd have to reimagine our world. And there are a lot of forces that don't want our world reimagined, a lot of corporate interests that don't want our world reimagined. And we have gotten stuck on these hamster wheels of having our energy and our attention siphoned away from us and pulled into these screens. Because I think that if we really sat with the grief that we feel at the loss of biodiversity and ecosystems and languages and people and autonomy on this planet, that grief might compel us into a sense of action of truly reimagining this world. But instead, I think that reimagining our plates seems relatively easy. And I know for those of us that are consummate regenerative agriculturalists and meat eaters, it doesn't feel easy to reimagine, but I think you understand what I'm saying. We've all had a salad or a side of rice, and we can imagine what it might be for that to take up a larger portion of our plate. But if we had to reimagine how we manufacture, ship, mine, extract, process and labor in a globalized world, we'd have to reimagine every component of our lives. We'd have to reimagine how we spend money and how we make money. We'd have to reimagine how we think of our material goods and what is important for us to own in our relationship with pretty much every aspect of our lives. We'd have to reimagine infrastructure as much as we'd have to reimagine our communities and our social structures. That is a tall order. That is incredibly intimidating at the level of the individual and also at the level of the collective. And it also probably doesn't serve the bottom line that corporations have bent this world in order to serve in the way that this has been in some ways designed, and in others I think is just sort of a snowball effect of all of these different events throughout history. Another piece of this is that reimagining our plates is relatively simple, but reimagining everything I just shared, shipping, mining, extracting, manufacturing, processing, trucking, infrastructure, community, that speaks to a deep level of complexity. And if you're a frequent listener to the podcast, you know that I am often trying to communicate about complexity and to really tease at just how complex and interwoven our world is. And we're often in our culture looking for a silver bullet, a single pill solution, one idea to rule them all, if you will. And the problem with the problem is that it's many things that are interwoven together, interconnected, and affecting and playing off of one another. I came up against this time and time again in my research around infrastructure, shipping, commodities, and some of the historical influences that led to globalization in the first place. And I keep coming back to, I have this kind of picture in my head where I imagine a map of the world, and even maps influence the way we see our world, right? And you'll hear me here talk about a couple of maps in some coming episodes, whether it's the Mercator projection, which I think really gives us a different view of what size different countries are, or the Spillhouse projection that shows just how much of our blue marble here on Earth is blue ocean. And so even just maps. So I keep coming back to this idea where I'm imagining a map of the world as mycelial networks, and they sort of glow in this neon way, in this three-dimensional map of the world that's inside of my head. And it interconnects and interpenetrates through all of these different ecosystems, this beautiful reciprocity and connectivity that's moving nutrients and information throughout the natural world. And overlaid on top of that map is a map of all the nodes of shipping routes that take goods around the globe and in and out of ports and to people via trucking routes, which forms this other map. And then there's a map of the primary resources that we're moving around the world, whether that's oil or copper or salt or food or textiles and the fibers that make them up. It's power metals like lithium and cobalt. It's flowers, you name it. And then there are the roads, the 40 million miles of roads that connect all of those mines to shipping ports and all of the trucking and all of these different things. And what's amazing is that some of these maps actually exist. If you look up Rabobank, they have a great amount of shipping maps for conventional trade. Obviously, we don't have this beautiful map of mycelial networks. It's just something that's in my head. But what I think that this speaks to is just this completely interwoven complexity where everything is connected. And when we talk about the rise of convenience foods on this podcast, something I think we've explored a lot, you know, we talk about it disrupting this whole food and evolutionary appropriate diet, you know, that was really influenced by history, you know, whether it's from the Industrial Revolution to how roads allowed goods to travel, to the mining of sand, to the creation of synthetic fertilizers that used phosphorus rock to fertilize these bigger tracts of food. It goes back into the history of agriculture itself. And so this is really deeply interconnected, every aspect of this. And we often talk about how ecosystems are all connected, and that there's this web of life that we are woven into. And that really is the tagline of this podcast, has become the threads of what it is to be humans woven into this earth, because we are that. We are woven into this place, and those human threads are exerting an influence on the earth that I think is way outside of the size of what it is to be human. And so we talk about this, about how ecosystems are connected, about how the rise of certain components of our built world, you know, the one that we really understand through the lens of this podcast, convenience foods or conventional agriculture, are really clear to us. But we know that all ecosystems are connected, that we're part of this web of life. And then overlaid on top of that is this web of supply, right? That there are these supply chains, the way that we move resources to our bodies and waste away from our bodies. If the web of life is that natural component, this is a sort of synthetic web of life, this global supply chain network. And I really believe that much of it, if not all of it in some way, can be traced back to food. And again, that idea from my friend James that we terraformed the earth in search of calories. I think that this matters. And I know that it's going to feel a little wild to go on these explorations after we've explored so much around food and nutrition. But I really believe that these are interconnected concepts. And the more research I've done, the more I've started to see a picture that I think is starting to me on some level to make sense. And this process on my end, all the reading I've done, all the research I've done, I've felt a little bit like a detective on a murder TV show where they have the big board and they have all of these different events and people and they have these little pins and they're connecting the red thread, connecting all these dots and going absolutely crazy. And I think at times I have been that person in this. But I think what starts to emerge is a picture of our world and how we got here and why we might be vilifying cows. And I think it also does something that has been really important to me when I'm, especially as I've talked about the butcher shop over the years. And so for those of you that don't know, I own a butcher shop in Denver, Colorado, that focuses on regenerative agriculture and 100% grass-fed and grass-finished meats. And one of the hurdles that I've had over the years in explaining what the butcher shop does when people walk in the door is that fundamental to understanding what the butcher shop does and why it's different, you almost have to understand what conventional agriculture and the supply chain from conventional ag to grocery stores looks like. And so sometimes to understand what we do, we have to understand what we don't do. Or to understand what something is, we have to understand what something isn't. And so in sort of looking at some of these other resources outside of food and the infrastructure that underpins them and our food system, I've really had to come back to this idea of to explore the idea that cows aren't the problem, though we know that it's not the cow, it's the how. We have to explore some ideas around what might be the problem or what regenerative agriculture isn't. And to better understand, I think, our world. Again, you know, one of the overarching themes in all of this that I've really come back to is the idea of a way, right? That these resources come from a way, that our waste goes to a way. And so how can we better see a way? But it has also been about peeling back the curtain on what is unseen about our world. And sometimes the most unseen things are those things that are so ubiquitous that we have used for so long, that are so inculcated in our idea of what it means to exist in modernity, in this idea of civilization, that we no longer recognize or consider them. And this can be something as simple as a pane of glass in your window that used to be sand, or the glass on your phone that used to be a more particular type of sand, or the roads that move things all around, or the idea that we can turn on a tap and water comes out, and the infrastructure that has to happen for that to be possible, or that we can touch one little button and we can call forth electricity. And I think within the idea of evolution, it would be absolute magic to all of our ancestors for about 99.9% of all of human history. Like, we are, these feats are magical. And in this, I have also derived a new appreciation for that within my life, to be able to see some of these things. It almost gives you this sense of having X-ray vision. Now, I will say, and again, these are some heavy explorations, and if you always have those X-ray goggles on, you're kind of going to drive yourself crazy. And so keep coming back to this idea that we can't do that. But it's really interesting to begin to see these things. And as we begin to see them, I think that is where we have that lever of curiosity. We're beginning to see stuff. And I think we might be able to start to reimagine things. But we can't reimagine what we don't recognize. We can't reimagine what we don't know or don't see as existing. And I want to reimagine this. And I know that we are really capable of this, because in the last 15 years of being in agriculture, I have seen us make incredible strides in reimagining agriculture in a new old way. And I'm not saying that those ideas didn't exist before, but taking where we are right now and beginning to reimagine that. And I really think that we could begin to reimagine our world, that we are playful and we are creative and we are loving, and that we could reimagine this. So some of these explorations are really about exploring what might be the problem and exploring some of the complexity of all of these different systems, these different resources around the idea of infrastructure. And if you're thinking to yourself that this sounds a little bit dry, I really don't think it is. I have been absolutely captivated by this work. Now, you as my listeners will know that I am prone to finding special interests and becoming really passionate about them. I became incredibly passionate about beavers when I was doing the podcast with Ben Goldfarb and about roads. But I got really interested in sand, in infrastructure, in power stations, in fuel sources, in where petroleum comes from, and the sort of geology that underpins it, and how it's worked its way into pretty much every component of our lives. And I really hope I can bring some of that excitement into a space that might not sound at the outset all that exciting. And I'm sort of punctuating it with some explorations of what it is to be human, and I think some more personal deep dives as well as these more technical deep dives. Something that I want to touch on before we get into some of these explorations is that they're a little bit divisive. I have spent my whole career straddling a lot of political divides, and I feel really lucky that that has been the case for me, that working in agriculture, I was working with people who had a lot of different political beliefs, and I was always kind of straddling them. And I found that in doing this work, I am also crossing some of those divides. And I also know that my listenership is diverse a lot across a lot of different spectrums. And I, you guys, I love that so much. And I think that some of these explorations will be challenging to people on every side of the equation. The left, right, the middle, nowhere, anywhere. You know that I don't get into a lot of politics on this podcast, and I'm not about to start now, but a lot of these things are touching some more political pressure points. And I think that one of the things I've noticed, and of course we're in an election year, and so perhaps this is going to be very, very clear to us, but noticing a lot of commentary, whether it's books or op-eds, on the sort of rural and urban divide. You know, I think that that's another divide that tends to be across in agriculture. You know, I operated a butcher shop in Denver, but I was working with really places that were a lot more rural. I now live in a very rural place. And so there's a lot of divisions here. And I think that when we talk about climate change, that can be something that feels divisive for some people. And when we talk about all of these different divisions, I think that it could tug at some things. And there's something else that I've noticed, and it's that a lot of the people that I'm interviewing are the same people that are sort of parroting some of the narrative that we've heard about agriculture in mainstream media. And I've noticed this as I've followed some of these amazing guests on Twitter, and I've thought a lot about my role here as a podcast host, and at this time, I'm not interested in hosting more contentious explorations. I'm not interested in really pushing back hard on certain components of people's work. I'm more interested in what it is to hold and create a container for a lot of different ideas. But this is something that I've noted and that I think is worth interesting, and I think it's worth pointing out. I'm not quite sure how that's going to play out. Maybe eventually that this can become a place for a more robust conversation around this between some different stakeholders. And I hope to host some conversations coming up on the podcast as well. But it's something that I noticed, and I think it's worth taking note of. And something that I have seen increasingly, and I think social media has really deepened this, is that when somebody has one idea we don't like, sometimes we will throw out their entire body of work. And so we'll read something, or we'll hear that somebody is of a certain opinion, and we completely dismiss all of their work. And I don't like this. I really think that we are capable of so much more introspection and curiosity and playfulness when it comes to this, that we can see that somebody might have an opinion that we don't agree with, and not create a blanket statement about how we feel about their work because of that. And, you know, within this podcast, even the past year, I think I shared that in Kat Bohannon's episode and her book Eve, How the Female Body Drove 200 Million Years of Evolution, that book was one of my favorite reads of last year, and I found it challenging because there were some small pieces that I really didn't agree with her on. And yet, I thought that her work was illuminating and incredible, and it can be both. And I think that this is so important because I think that there's a lot of cognitive dissonance going on. Number one, just to say that there's some cognitive dissonance in how we view the world. And I think that we also in a time when so many opinions are being bandied about, that we often don't stop to really consider if we share those opinions and we just fall within our silos on those opinions. And I see that with journalism and agriculture, that I feel like a lot of people might not be stopping to say, well, is this really what I think about something? Or have I thought about this? Have I researched this? Or is there just this quorum, this consensus amongst my peers? And so I'm just taking that at face value and going to parrot it. And I think that we all participate in some of that with social media, and that it has changed the world. And so this is asking for us to get really curious, to get uncomfortable, and to dive into some things that might feel charged one way or the other, you know, whether that's politically or just somebody's work or whatever it is, and to be able to hold a lot of different pieces, a lot of complexity. I want us to hold more complexity and one another within that complexity. You know, I found this quote just before recording this, as I was kind of putting together a roadmap for this episode. And I think that one thing I really want to be careful about is putting the onus on consumers. You know, it was British Petroleum that coined the term carbon footprint and really sort of tossed that back to the individual. I really believe that the onus belongs on corporations. And that being said, I think that we can be more conscious consumers like we are with our food, but that, you know, there is a limit to this. And I did come back to this idea as I've been exploring this, that there's this kind of coercive aspect of the world that we live in, that we've been inculcated in, that we're just kind of shunted into a space where we have to go along to get along. And that is 100% the case. And so I don't want any of this to be a source of shame or weight for people as we explore this. But I did find this, and so much of consumerism itself has a really rich history of being something that was planned. That planned and psychological obsolescence was considered and became a part of our goods that have declined in quality, something we are going to explore, of course. And I found this quote from economist Victor Lebo. And it said, "Our enormously productive economy demands that we make consumption our way of life, that we convert the buying and use of goods into rituals, that we seek our spiritual satisfaction and our ego satisfaction in consumption. We need things consumed, burned up, worn out, replaced, and discarded at an ever-increasing rate." I want to pair that with this other quote that I found. Quote, "The prospect of ever-extendable consumer desire, characterized as progress, promised a new way forward for modern manufacture, a means to perpetuate economic growth. Progress was about the endless replacement of old needs with new, old products with new. Notions of meeting everyone's needs with an adequate level of production did not feature." And I think that we see this again and again, and I think we even see this in some of the movements towards techno-utopian climate solutions, something that I'm not currently looking at, and if we did look at it, it would be through a very critical lens. But I think that all of this is done in the name of progress, in the name of the new, and this constantly cycling on a road to where? Where do we think we're going? This is another question I come back to. Where do we think we're going? I'm just not sure. Peeking at my notes here, and I think that this is kind of coming around. And I hope that throughout the course of this podcast, you've kind of heard some of my intentions, what brought me to these explorations, and gotten a chance to see a little bit inside my brain and to connect this. I know that in order to connect these dots, I want to infuse some of myself in here because I think it's coming from my curiosity. And one of the promises I made to myself and that Josh really pushed me to make for myself in the course of this podcast was that I be true and loyal to my curiosity. And what I didn't know when I started this podcast 2 years ago was that every guest would change my life. And I know that sounds like a lot, but it's true. Every single guest that has come on the podcast has changed my life, changed the trajectory of my life, of my interests. They have introduced me to books and concepts and ideas that radically changed the way that I saw the world, that I see the world, that I move through the world. And I want to honor that. I think it's really beautiful. I am so profoundly grateful for the podcast and how it's changed me, how it's healed me, and how it's changed these explorations. And I think that it's important to have that sort of narrative from somebody that is maybe familiar to you. Maybe I'm new to you, in which case you can go back and learn some about me through some of the other podcasts that I've done, both here and with others. But that this be rooted in, we are on this journey together, exploring some of these things that I never thought I would be exploring. And so just to give you a little bit of a preview of coming events, first of all, on my Instagram, I always keep a book list of upcoming authors so that you can read those books too and be up on them if you would like to be. Some of these authors are releasing works as we go through the podcast, and so they won't be available, and we'll be giving those first little peeks of them, which I'm really excited about. But we are going to explore a world of resources, and still working on a couple of guests here. So hopefully we get to touch on all of these things, but we're going to look some at the resource of sand and just how impactful it is in our world with Vince Beiser, whose book, The World in a Grain, is incredible. Hopefully, we'll also get to explore some of sand with Ed Conway, along with other resources like copper and lithium and oil. We're going to be exploring some around infrastructure from a very, very different perspective with Deb Chakra. We are going to explore dust and some of the way that these materials that move our lives become these teeny tiny particles that we are literally breathing in, and water with Jay Owens. We are going to explore the ocean and some ecosystem stuff, some really big ecosystem stuff that we haven't touched on the podcast. You know, we've touched on soil. We've touched on some of these prairie grassland type ecosystems. We're going to look at some other ecosystems through that, including the engine of the ocean. We are going to explore the entire supply chain of groceries with Benjamin Lohr. We are going to explore some about American manufacturing, which I think will illustrate some other pieces of this with Rachel Slade. We are going to be looking at cold storage. We are going to be looking at the interconnected earth cycles. We're going to be looking at oil with John Valiant. We are going to hopefully, we have to hold a big thought for this, look at shipping with Rose George, and just really diving into some of this. And my hope is that when I can't get an author or a guest to speak to some of these things, that maybe I can bring some of what I've learned, even though it's going to be a very amateur-esque, non-expert viewpoint. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to weave some of this together as we go. I think I want to come back to this idea right at the end as the podcast kind of goes through this name transition once again, returning to Groundwork. And I don't really know how that's going to look. And I just want to make sure that people can still find the podcast. That's really crucial to me, especially I want more earballs here because I think these explorations are really fun and I really enjoy this. And I'm trying to make this my work and I'll have some other offerings that are coming up around this and ways that you can support. But for now, you can always leave a one-time tip. And the best way to support the podcast is to send some of your favorite episodes to friends and family. Almost all podcasts are found by word of mouth anyway. But I want to leave us with really exploring. If it's not cows, what is it? Why are cows the scapegoat? How did we get here? You know, what is this relationship of the built and the natural world? And what would it mean to reimagine our world? Can we do that? Can we take a step back and reimagine it? Can we look at a diverse intersection of opinions in order to better understand some of the factors that make and move our world, some of the ways we're inculcated in this society and the ideas of progress and civilization. I am so grateful to be here. I'm so excited to share this. And so I hope that you can get excited and curious with me. And I just want to thank you for being here. You have stuck it out with me through some bumpy and slightly inconsistent releases. Got a really solid release schedule coming up. And I just am honored to do this work. And even though it has been a really hard year and a hard season for me, this work, this interest, this curiosity, this excitement is part of what has tethered me to this earth. And I kept coming back because of the relationship that you and I have built on the podcast and the conversations that I get to have here and the explorations and starting to maybe put together some of this work myself and to give time and space to my work as well as the work of other people. And I'm hoping that these interviews will represent the depth and care that I'm putting into them, which is a lot. I'm putting a lot of work and care into them, but I'm also trying to work and care for my own work, my own writing, my own creation of episodes like this that sort of bring everything together and provide us with some anchor points and some bringing things together that I really want to do. And yeah, I'm just so excited to be here. I'm so excited to lay the groundwork with you and to explore the threads of what it is to be humans woven into this earth. And we are woven in mind, body, and soil, you guys. Just really woven in deep. I'm so excited. It's such a pleasure. Please share the podcast. Please hit subscribe. Please leave a rating and review if you feel called to. And always feel free to reach out to me. All of my contact information is in the show notes. And I'm just really excited to go on this journey with you. Last thing I want to say is I'm not sure exactly where it's going. And while I have these ideas of how it's putting together, you know, as a detective looking at this whole murder mystery and trying to connect the dots, I don't know exactly where it's going. And that's okay, because I don't think we know exactly where we're going. And that's okay. The idea is that we can explore it, we can get curious about it, and then we can reimagine it. Thank you. I'm your host, Kate Kavanaugh, here on the Groundwork Mind, Body, and Soil podcast. It is such a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Mind, Body, and Soil podcast. If what you found resonated with you, may I ask that you share it with your friends or leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts? This act of reciprocity helps others find Mind, Body, and Soil. If you're looking for more, you can find us at groundworkcollective.com and at Kate_Kavanaugh, that's K-A-T-E underscore K-A-V-A-N-A-U-G-H on Instagram. I would like to give a very special thank you to China and Seth Kent of the band All Right All Right for the clips from their beautiful song Over the Edge from their album The Crucible. You can find them at All Right All Right on Instagram and wherever you listen to music.